tuned into Quick Charge, the high voltage podcast bringing you the top stories in electric vehicles and sustainable energy daily. And it's all powered by Electrek. Welcome to Quick Charge. It's April 18th, 2025, and I'm your host, Joe Boris. As we've been doing for the last several weeks, we are focusing on a single topic today, and that topic is hybrid semi-trucks. Now, I know there's not a ton of hybrid semi-trucks out there, and really none that I can think of from a major OEM, but this is really the hot topic right now in the trucking industry. There was a recent report that came out about the messy middle, talking about the pre-existing infrastructure that's out there for diesel, the future infrastructure that we all believe will be there for battery electric, and we are now currently in the middle where everything's a little bit messy. This is the concept put forward by Jeff Seeger. Jeff Seeger writes for CCJ, that's the Commercial Carrier Journal, and we're not going to make a big effort to promote other people's blogs on this podcast, but it's definitely worth reading this article. He talks about in the automobile space, there seems to be a growing interest in hybrids, given some of the infrastructure problems, costs, and range anxiety issues with battery electric vehicles. Most major automotive manufacturers are offering more hybrid powertrains. Why haven't we seen these powertrains take off in the commercial vehicle space? Will we see hybrids in class 4 to 8 trucks in the next 10 years? My bet is yes. The question is to what extent? The other major question is whether hybrids will be a regulation-only play or something that creates real value for OEMs and fleets. Now, that's a little bit disingenuous, and I get it. He writes for his audience, I write to mine. But he focuses in on Super Truck 2. Super Truck 2 was a concept that was developed by a couple of different OEMs. They all had their own different version of what Super Truck 2 was going to be. And that is intended to showcase existing technology put into this application of trucking and see what they can get in terms of efficiency. And the Kenworth Super Truck in particular claimed a 136% improvement in freight fuel efficiency. And it used a 48 volt battery to power electric fans, steering, HVAC pumps, etc., and drew about 80 horsepower. So this is really, really interesting, contributed to the low NOx rule, and fits right into that narrative of the messy middle. And frankly, this thing looks awesome. The central seating position is just as impractical and ridiculous here as it is in the Tesla, but man, it looks good. And they presented this really nice picture showing an evolution from one Kenworth kind of more historic square hood look to a more aero look to finally the Super Truck too. So really interesting stuff. I definitely recommend taking a look at it, and we will have his link in the show notes. But again, as I said, he writes to his audience, I write to mine, and there are millions and millions of miles getting logged by commercial trucks. A year ago, Volvo logged its 50 millionth 100% battery electric mile. They're going to be closing in on 100 million here sometime this year. Renault also 19 million miles. That was as of 2024. They're going to hit 25 million this year, especially as that fleet continues to grow. Motive trucks, here's a smaller that we talked about, class 4 to class 8. This is like a class 4, class 5 truck. Again, 5 million miles, and it's only got 100 trucks out there. Now, there is a question of longevity that a lot of truck drivers, commercial drivers, are going to bring up when we talk about battery electric. And that's why I've got this picture here. This is an orange EV. This is a terminal tractor, yard dog, yard hostler, whatever you want to call it. This thing shunts trailers all day long, every day. Massive stop and go, the most grueling type of work that you could imagine in a really horrific environment, surrounded by jet fuel, surrounded by diesel emissions, surrounded by salt air. These things have a tough, tough life. And the one that you see in that picture here was first deployed in 2015. It is still on the road. It's got more than 30,000 hours on it. There's no question that DHL has gotten their money's worth out of this, and they're now converting more of their yard trucks to this orange EV and other similar electric products. So these things are real. They exist. They're really, really cool. But there are a lot of use cases, especially if you're driving from like LA to Las Vegas or Phoenix or something, and you're driving for 8-9 hours, and before you see a stop sign, you're just cruising, where there isn't infrastructure, there isn't charging, and those things still aren't quite ready for prime time. There's a couple of different ways to address that. Revoy EV, they have that kind of go-between trailer rig. But this is not the most practical solution because, of course, it adds a tremendous amount of weight. The GVWR rules, the combined vehicle weight rules, have not changed to be a special case for these guys. So they're in big trouble. They can only really carry high volume, high value freight, where they're going to run out of room dimensionally before they run out of weight. And that is an incredibly limited market. It works, don't get me wrong, but it's an incredibly limited market. There is, however, another solution. It's a solution that's been in front of us for about 100 years, and that's the diesel electric locomotive. Most trains today, they operate with diesel generators creating electrical power through a genset, and they are putting those electrons into electric motors. That has proven to be the most efficient way to haul cargo in a rail situation. And now, thanks to this company, Revolt, they're building an extended range electric semi-truck that operates on the same principle with electric axles, electric drive motors, powered by a 9-liter diesel engine from Scania that is powering the rest of the system and providing power when needed. So this is just a really, really cool thing. This startup is a year old today, or actually a year old yesterday, and we've got their CEO today, Gus Gardner. Gus, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm really excited to have you here.
Yeah, it's been crazy. You know, it's been a crazy 12 months. We celebrated our first, you know, our 1 year anniversary actually, yesterday. So it was a pretty exciting day. We've come really far from, you know, moving into an empty warehouse in an interesting part of Austin back in July. And, you know, now we've got three trucks on the road. We're in like what I can only describe as a mad dash to get everything set up and ready to go to ACT, which I'm still surprised is in like 7 days. So
sneaks up on you.
Yeah. You know, so it's been incredible, and the team here is, you know, I would say just kind of world class in terms of the productivity, our ability to get, you know, three trucks on the road running inside of a year, and you know, I think there are a lot of, you know, comparable companies where it takes them 3 years to get one truck, right? So I think it's a really an accomplishment of our engineering team, our shop team, our, you know, kind of extended, you know, partner network of people who have really made this happen.
I agree with everything you just said. And I will also add that it takes some OEMs longer than a year to put one car on a road. So you're definitely doing the right thing there. And you seem like a scrappy crew. I've met some of your crew in the past and talked to them in different contexts at ACT and at other locations. And I know everybody involved is just super, super sharp. But let's talk about the concept, right? Because we started off this show talking about hybrid trucks. The next big thing in trucking would be hybrids. There's conversations about mild hybrid trucks, especially following Super Truck 2 and sort of the success of that program. But you guys are a little different. You're not exactly reinventing the wheel here. You're applying a concept that's been in use in, you know, diesel electric locomotives for like almost 100 years. And I say that without exaggeration, right? You've got a diesel engine that's acting as a generator, sending electrical power to the drive axles. Can you talk to us a little bit about why that's more efficient and why you're going that route instead of something that, you know, I think many people might see as an easier route of just putting an electric motor between a diesel engine and a conventional transmission and calling it a day?
Our whole concept, and it feeds a lot from my background, but is, you know, we need to build a better vehicle. So when I talk about better, I mean performance. You know, it needs to accelerate faster. It needs to haul as much or more freight. It needs to, you know, accommodate the world in which truck drivers operate. We are not, nobody, no company, no one is large enough or controls enough of the market for, you know, to change how freight moves. There are rules, you know, you need to do a 10 to 11 hour drive cycle. That's regulation. No company's going to change that. Charge times don't work in that world. So we kind of approach this saying, look, we're not special. The world's not going to change for us. We're not going to get infrastructure for our product. So what can we do in that constrained environment to create value for our customers? And so, the series hybrid concept makes so much sense for, you know, people operating out of Tennessee, people operating out of the Rocky Mountain, you know, the kind of Rocky Mountain West, right? Where you're going up and down hills, you're doing all these things. So instead of, you know, using a Jake brake and burning fuel to slow your truck down, you're just capturing those electrons again, right? So there are a lot of use cases. You know, we have a couple of, you know, prospective customers in the oil patch, right? Where, you know, you're out, you're getting the energy that we're going to need to drive our economy, but there's no grid out there, right? There's no power out there. So if you have a truck that can also produce 250 kilowatts of power that you can link up in series, you know, to run really big equipment, you have a safer drilling rig. You have a better fracking operation. You have a better whatever. And now you're talking about, okay, so I get to, you know, reduce my emissions, which is great. And I do that by reducing fuel consumption. So I'm making more money. And, you know, the world is happier because, you know, we're not polluting it as much. And, you know, sort of universally, whether you believe in human caused climate change or not, or whatever, you like to save money. So if the way you save money also reduces emission, you get everybody, right? Like that's a good, in this world, those sort of win-wins are pretty hard to come by.
I love everything you're saying there. There's two things that you brought up that I want to focus on before we move on. One thing is this idea of designing a product for the world that we live in, right? And the world that we live in, even if you built out a nationwide infrastructure, we still haven't solved for parking. To your point, we haven't solved for the regulatory issues. We haven't solved for the noise constraints that limit the hours of operation of bringing in big trucks and equipment into neighborhoods and certain municipalities. And this product, I think, achieves some of those things, right? Like when we talk about drivers hoteling overnight, they don't have to run their diesel. They don't have to do any of that. They can run off the battery, correct?
Yes. Yeah. You can run. I mean, you can hotel, you know, you can run for, I think it's like 2 weeks on the batteries, right?
Wow.
And, you know, you can think, you know, one of the big things is like, think about crisis response, right? Sort of like after a hurricane or whatever, the truck that brings in, you know, the new transformers, like all the stuff that the linemen go up the ladder to fix or go up the bucket truck, that same truck can now plug in and power the sort of microgrid for the little camp of linemen that have to go fix all the power, right? Or, you know, provide a mobile EV charging station for any of the trucks where they're going back, right? We saw those Ford Lightnings powering houses after, you know, I'm gonna sound like an idiot, some hurricane, you know, so. No,
but I mean, but that's so true, right? Because we saw it after whatever hurricane it was, then there was a couple of ice storms,
yeah,
then there was a different hurricane, then there was the fires in California, but we've seen it over and over again where these battery hybrids, these V to G, V to X vehicles can bring real, dependable, reliable power where it's needed. And that's critically important. You know, one of the other things that's critically important when you compare this technology to battery electric, the weight penalty of a pure battery vehicle, because it has to have such a massive battery, they give you, yes, they do give you additional weight. They give you 2,000 extra pounds, but that's so much less than the weight penalty of those batteries. You're almost exclusively looking at high-end freight where you're running out of space before you're specking out on weight.
Yeah.
And that limits your market. That limits the runs you can do. That limits the jobs you can take, even if the infrastructure is there. So I got to assume that you looked at that and you said, what we're going to come up with is going to have a much lower weight penalty and is still going to enable our drivers to take more of those jobs that are out there and not just the high dollar freight jobs.
You know, that's one of the big things that we've been focused on from the beginning. And so if you look at, you know, we put out that the announcement, you know, with our first kind of first customer page trucking. They are, you know, they're one of these companies that everybody relies on and everyone touches, but no one's ever heard of. And so they were, I would say, kind of pioneers in lightweighting of trucks. And they did that for Ford. So they, one of their larger business units is really in the aluminum space. And so it's hauling coils out of Kentucky up into the Ford body stamping plants. And they had the closed loop. They created the freight kind of technology, like the trailer technology and the vehicle technology, to enable Ford to do a closed loop aluminum supply chain for their 2013 F-150. They are really good at understanding the small modifications you need to make to a vehicle to get, you know, a certain amount of weight, you know, to haul certain size coils and all this other stuff, right? And how you can do configurable trailers and everything else. So, you know, we've worked with them from pretty early on to understand, okay, like, here's how much all these things weigh. You know, sometimes it's just as like, okay, if you shift this back 2 inches or forward 2 inches, that's going to change your axle weights. And that's what really matters, right? And so there are all of these different things that are at play. And like, I'm not that smart. Like I often, you know, will say like, I'm not the guy that's going to change the world. And so, but I'm fine with that. I talk to the people who are that smart. And like Dan Titus at Page is one of those guys. Like he understands this. He's been a trucker since probably before he could walk. And, you know, he knows those small things you can do. And so we've, you know, partnered with them to really drive those decisions around, okay, what size battery, how much weight can we put in this part of the truck? How much can we do that? And then we give that to our engineers who are like, oh, okay, I'm going to put this component here. I'm going to put this component here. That's how much this weighs. Here's your flow rate. And they do a bunch of math. And all of a sudden we have a truck that kind of works functionally, like it drives and pulls the trailer, and it works economically because you can still throw, you know, two large coils of aluminum or in your trailer.
And I think there's another important aspect to this that a lot of people are going to miss when they first look at that, is that it is a conventional body semi. You're not doing this central driving position, which looks great in pictures, but doesn't really function as you're a truck driver, right? Especially if you've got a sleeper cab configuration, your arm is not 6 feet long. You can't pull into the weigh station, hand them your papers. Yeah. If you're going over borders, you can't just roll down the window and reach down. You have to stop the thing, turn it off, get up. By utilizing a more conventional design, it works better for the way Americans currently operate trucks. And Page is a great example. Yeah. They've optimized their entire operation to be able to pull into where they need to pull in, whether it's a weigh station or whether it's a security gate, hand those papers back and forth to the driver and move on. It just works. And I think that's a critical key element to the adoption of this thing, because it's going to get the drivers on board. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what the CEO of the shipping company says, or the freight company says, or the logistics company says. Yeah. If the operators don't want to drive the truck, you got a real problem.
Yeah. I mean, it's that same concept where I think it's the area that we got it right from the start, is we're not going to change how drivers behave. We're not going to change how freight markets behave. We're not going to change this stuff. So, you know, you look at the adoption of, especially in owner operators, right? Where in the trucking world, something like 70 to 80% of all the trucks on the road are owned or managed by fleets with less than three trucks. So that's the market. And they still buy at a premium long nose Petes that get worse gas mileage to the tune of $35,000 a year, because they like how it feels, or they like that it still looks the same. Now you're saying, okay, I'm going to change your driveline. I'm going to change everything about it. And I'm going to put you in the middle where you've never been. And you're going to expect them to buy it because it saves the trees, when they're happy with paying more to burn more gas, diesel. Yeah. Like,
it's hard too, right? Because like, if you're an over the road driver, and you're doing, you know, cross country, or you're doing, you know, like R&L drives from Columbus to, you know, Tampa or whatever, you are driving through a ton of trees and a ton of wilderness. And it's really hard from that little driver's seat in your little, you know, 92, or, you know, if you've got a nice Volvo 102 inch sleeper cab, you know, it's really hard from that space looking out at trees and mountains and forests to buy into these concerns, right? Because a lot of it, you're seeing it.
Yeah.
And that space that you're in, it's not just your office. It's not just your truck. You kind of live there. So everything you're saying is exactly right, and exactly what needs to be said to get these guys to buy in. So let's talk a little bit about this. You guys are using the long-nosed Peterbilts right now, a 9-liter Cummins.
We have one long nose, and then the rest of the fleet, the rest of our trucks are more fleet focused, the sort of short 579s.
Okay. But I mean, again, still a big market, still a popular truck. Yeah. Let's say I've got a W900. I've got a big square hood, and I go, this is cool. I want to do this. How complicated is that conversion process, and how long do I have to drive it for that to pencil out?
Yeah. So it really depends, right? I think where we start is we need to make sure that our product adds value if we have no government support. We don't have the volume purchase to bring the cost down to where it makes sense for everybody always, right? And we may never get there. Like, if I'm being honest, I mean, I think honesty and transparency is important in these things. And so, like, you know, we probably won't be the best solution for everybody with a W900, right? What really matters is, like, what's your situation? Are you driving over mountains? Are you going from, you know, we have one person with a very similar truck that's going from Grand Junction to Denver and then on to somewhere in like Kansas or something. You know, they get like 4.5 miles a gallon on that route. And with our, you know, based on our math and optimization, all this stuff, we're doing way better. Right? Like, way better. The payback period for that operator is probably less than a year. And so,
and that assumes that fuel prices stay the same. We've seen in the past, when we've had political turmoil and uncertainty, we've seen fuel price spikes, and we've seen fuel prices in Canada, fuel prices in Europe approach $8, $9, $10 a gallon. You start talking about $8 a gallon diesel, this solution pencils real quick,
real fast. And so I think that's where, you know, for those operators that are, you know, doing hills and mountains, same Tennessee, Pennsylvania, right? Like, any of that elevation change, like, we do great. So the worst, you know, if you have a fully mechanical driveline and, you know, you're getting 10 miles a gallon and you're going, you know, LA to Phoenix on a flat road at 60 miles an hour without a single stop sign for 10 hours, we're probably not.
But you're doing stop and go between O'Hare and Midway, running semi trucks or tractor loads for DHL or Amazon. Dude, you're going to pay for this thing in an hour.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's the market's huge. We don't, you know, I often say, like, let's not let perfect be the enemy of the good, right? Let's, for the people that we add value for, we create tremendous value. And for the other people, there are other companies that are going to service that customer, and they're doing a good job. So, like, let them.
Yeah. That's like, you have these conversations with people, especially with startups, especially with, you know, founders and CEOs, which you technically are one of those people now, right? You're a tech founder. Welcome to the party, right? They always talk about, like, oh, it's green fields and blue skies and we're going to dominate the market. And, like, that's not credible. Right? Like, there's only going to be so many unicorns, but to sit there and say, like, hey, we're going to develop a product that adds value in certain use cases, and if that's your use case, we're going to add a tremendous value. That sounds incredibly normal. Like, you got to, like, hype that up a little bit more. You got to, like, throw in a free t-shirt or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've got some great t-shirts. I think it comes from, like my background is in, you know, I started as a banker and then I really spent a lot of time in metals, right? And metals are one of those things no one thinks about, right? Nobody really thinks about where gold comes from, right? They either buy it on a, you know, on some ETF or they're, you know, it's some jewelry piece. And same with aluminum, right? Nobody drinks a can of Budweiser and says, oh man, I wonder how many steps it took to get this can here, right?
Yeah, oh, like, I mean, you're speaking my language, dude. I mean, my whole family worked at the Reynolds Aluminum plant out in Salisbury, yeah. North Carolina. So, like, I get it. You're preaching to the choir. Let's go.
Yes. And so, I mean, and Reynolds was great. Like, I'm surprisingly familiar with a lot of their background.
Oh, you're talking about that Ford route. And I was like, yeah. I've driven that route.
Yeah, right. And you know, we were up in where the truck we're taking ACT, this, you know, it's called Elroy. It's a long nose Pete. It's getting restored by a guy named Bruce Wilson, who's, you know, he's got a YouTube channel. He's an awesome guy. You know, he's like a stone's throw from one of the largest aluminum mills in the world, right? And so it's those things where, you know, my background has always been in the stuff that nobody cares about, right? And I find it kind of interesting. Also, it's, you know, it's easier to go into those industries because, like, the smart people just avoid them, right? Like, they go into the fun stuff. So I've never needed, you know, I've never found joy in overpromising or anything else. It's like, you need the thing, we're going to do it. And if it works, if the numbers work, that's fantastic. And if not, like, okay. Right. So I think that's in this world with so much, just, you know, everything is like, oh my God, they slammed this person, or this person is going to, you know, conquer the world, or like, everything is so,
so emotional.
Just, yeah. Like, it's not, it's a truck. It, you know, your toilet paper needs to get to the store, right? That's what we do. So let's not pretend that we're curing cancer here.
Man, if I hadn't spent the last 10 years of my life rebuilding my entire identity around my Volvo VNR, I'd probably be right there with you.
Yeah.
Well, so while we're on that topic, you do already have a Swedish connection, because your power plant is a 9-liter Scania motor, which is, yes, a rare bird in the U.S.
They're great trucks. You know, it's a funny kind of journey, because, you know, it wasn't on the radar. Bruce obviously is their kind of U.S. agent, and it turns out that their headquarters are in San Antonio, right? Which is
right. Not too
literally
far
an
from
hour
me.
From our
show. Yeah.
So when, you know, when we're first starting and talking to folks, you know, we're talking to Cummins, we're talking to, you know, some of the other larger suppliers, and I'm like, oh, these guys are cool. Like, let's just go down and, you know, like, I'll have lunch with just about anybody. Right. And so, hey, like, let's just go down, we'll have lunch, meet them and see what happens. Right. And, you know, sure enough, like, you know, Jorg, who's the president of Scania USA, he's an amazing guy. Right. We're just talking about, you know, motorcycles and all sorts of fun stuff. And so, you know, we get to talking, and they had a great power plant that, you know, makes a lot of sense. And it checks the boxes for, like, number one, emissions compliance. Yeah, so it's
tier four, tier five.
Yeah. Tier four final. And it is, it'll comply with, if your listeners are familiar with sort of the 2027 EPA cliff, like, it already meets those levels. We're getting our EPA certification right now. So we should have that in the next couple months. And so they've been really helpful with that. They've been fantastic. And we're the same way, we're kind of fuel agnostic. We are engine supply agnostic. Like, we want to demonstrate that, you know, it's not too hard. If you have the right people and the right software, and the things that are hard, we patent and protect, you know, pretty right. aggressively. And the things that aren't, it's like, hey, let's integrate any J1939 engine. You know, we can spend 2 weeks and get it all connected.
And that's the hot setup, because, you know, as we talk about use cases and you talk about these different motors, and we mentioned tier four, and we talk about carbon emissions reduction, you've got, by disconnecting the internal combustion engine from the driveline, you can operate it at its peak efficiency, right? As long as it's making that 250 kilowatts that you need, and it's essentially humming along like a turbine. So it's generating efficient power. It's not overloaded. It's not belching out smoke. It's doing its thing. Stop and go traffic, up and down hills. That's exactly where you need to be looking. And it's not going to be, it's just going to be smooth, quiet, calm. And man, I think you've got it here. Look, Gus, we are coming to the end of our time commitment here. I know, we obviously want to talk about ACT Expo. ACT is going to be in Anaheim this year. I will be there. I'm going to go hunt you down and get one of those cool Revolt t-shirts, take some pictures with you. For everybody listening to this who maybe hasn't heard of you, who wants to check out and find out more, how do they find out more?
Yeah, so revoltmotors.io is the website. We are not the Indian motorcycle company. So it's .io, not .com. That's kind of the primary place. Anyone can find me on LinkedIn. I try and make sure that I've time to kind of stay connected with people who are buying the trucks and are, really kind of on the ground. We don't do too much on social media. Bruce, I'll give another shout out to Bruce Wilson on his YouTube channel. All of our videos go through him. He does a really good job of kind of explaining all of our tech and what we're doing. He drives all of our trucks and kind of shows off what we're doing.
Beautiful. And a fleet operator can come to you with a fleet assessment and say, hey, this is an option. This is what we're doing now. This is what it's costing us. And you can plug that information into your tables and give them back. This is what it'll cost you with our truck and go from there. Yep.
Yep, exactly.
That's awesome. All right. Once again, Gus Gardner from Revolt Motors, RevoltMotor.io, not .com. We don't even get confused with the Indian motorcycle engines, but still very, very cool concept. Definitely recommend you check it out. If you're going to be at the ACT Expo next week in Anaheim, California, be there. Look for me. I'll be there too. Actually, don't look for me. I don't think a lot of you guys like me. So, hey, we'll see you around. Be sure to like and subscribe to get the follow-up story. And we'll see you later.